Welcome back to the TT Podcast, where we're chatting to Ryan Kringle. Now, if you've not heard part one last week, stop this episode right now. Go back, watch that, listen to that, and then come back and pick up with part two. But for now, Ryan, Steve had this question he wanted to ask you.
Obviously, you've had two events now, TT23 and Manx 23. Where's the toughest section for you?
That is a hard question.
And don't tell me in the garage.
Don't know, it's the hardest bits I find is the big bike with my neck. Because people call me a cat, I was probably more than me a cat, and I was out the screen. I don't like being behind the bubble and not being able to see everything that's going on. So if you see photos of me,
you're not comfy. Yeah.
No, my head's constantly out the screen. And like,
thought about entering on a Honda Goldwing or something like that?
Yeah, try something a bit different.
Put the radio on. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah, maybe get a pillion. Get your brother on the back.
Oh no! I just remember coming down to Balcrane and stuff, and the Sulby Straight, and again into Blaff. The force of the neck and the helmet pushing back, I couldn't breathe properly. And I remember as soon as I hit the brakes, I just have to take massive gasps of breath and prepare myself for the next section. And go, as soon as you landed off Blaff, like, right, now I've got to go to the end of Sulby now, and then I'll be okay again until I get to Ramsey. So it's just, it is mad. You just teach yourself how to do it, don't you? You know, prepare yourself for each section at a time.
It's the same sort of thing for me working with Chris Pritchard, to be quite honest with you. Big deep breaths.
What, big shoulders, because you have to carry me.
Yeah, exactly.
Carry me through everything. Well, I think a lot of people don't realise that, especially when you see onboard camera on any race in MotoGP, Superbike, TT, you don't realise how much force is, when you get out of the bubble and you're braking, how much force is actually on you. I've not really experienced it probably to the same degree a lot of people have, but it is a stress, and it is something you've got to kind of work against, isn't it?
It is, and like I said, I've never had myself wedged in a seat with something behind me stop me moving, because I normally, 9 times out of 10, if something's there or thereabouts, I'm a person that won't touch anything. I'll just leave it and ride around that problem, and I just couldn't. I was just sliding in the seat, my neck was getting ripped off my shoulders. Like, there's no way of preparing for this, though. It's just, the only way you're doing it is building up throughout the fortnight your neck muscles, isn't it?
You did a bit of Superstock, British Championship.
Yep.
You know, in 23, sorry. So on the build-up to 24 for the TT, obviously it's a massive expense already, racing a TT, you know, racing anywhere to a certain degree. But, you know, is the plan to go and do some more British stuff pre-TT to get some mileage up and get your bike fitness going?
I would like to, but unfortunately, I think I went on last year. I'm still trying to wiggle my way out of that and get this year sorted as well. My main priority is TT, and I know I've worked everything out of fuel and tyres and engines, expenses and stuff. So fortunately, I have picked up a ride for 600 this year, so my expenses for that's quite little. So I've just got to try and box off this big bike stuff, and once that money's there, I'm just in the middle of trying to sort this out at the minute, and if I can get that money to sit on side and anything that comes available then I'll do. But I carry an injury I've had for 10 years now, which I really struggle on short circuits with. Don't struggle with the TT, but it's when you're under load on the brake, and I've done something to my shoulder, and no one can seem to get to the bottom of it. I've been to numerous people. So we went to Thruxton, and we were running the pack from 20th to 11th we were, and everything was going good. And then after half race distance, you come out of the complex and you got the fast right, left. I just couldn't steer the bike anymore at the speed I need to keep going, so I had to throttle off. And it's annoying, because I know I can be with them guys and do that, but I physically couldn't. But I've done a lot. I've never trained this winter. I am training.
Never trained.
No, it's just not my thing. You know,
use the bike as fitness.
Yeah, I do a lot of motocross, and in my head that was my fitness.
It's weird, because obviously motocross is massive on legs and shoulders.
It is, yeah.
And you seem to be struggling. It's really weird.
Yeah, it is a weird one. Motocross, I don't feel it. It's a TT, didn't feel it once, absolutely fine. It was a worry before I started, but it didn't hamper me at all, so that was good. It's, I don't know.
The sections you're talking about, you know, when you had the problems at TT, as well as those parts of Thruxton, you know, it's all counter steering.
It is.
Which is where the crank's spinning really hard, the inertia of the bike is pushing it forward, and it doesn't want to lean either way.
Yeah.
So you're trying to muscle it. That's, you know, for the people listening, that's the toughest part of riding the bike, and probably one of the toughest parts of the TT course.
Yeah, I think basically a short circuit, I think the aggro is caused from the load on the brake. That sets it off, and then it flares up. But, you know, I'm never going anywhere with that anyway. So I haven't got the money to do what them boys do, and I know what it takes. Like Thruxton, what Thruxton cost me out of my own pocket, it's ridiculous, and I just love it. So I just thought I was gonna have another crack, and if I can go back again this year, it's a good track. I love it. It's fast, isn't it? So it's a good place to go.
It's certainly fast.
So give us an idea then. You just said there you were kind of allocating your money for your tyres, for your fuel, and getting yourself sorted expense wise. Fuel always interests me. How much fuel do you go through? Because you never, again, as someone that just watches it, you just put, you know, the bikes just go round and round. You don't really appreciate how much fuel goes into a bike on a daily basis. How much money do you allocate for fuel?
Yeah, so this year I've worked it out. The bike I'm riding, 600, it's to be run on race fuel. And last year I didn't use race fuel purely down to running costs. I've honestly never had a problem with pump fuel even. I have my own dyno. I have back-to-back fuel, and the difference in gain, it's not worth the money. But so this year, lucky enough, I think I've sorted someone to pay for my fuel this year, which is a good bonus. But I think it's like 30, just shy of 30, like 5 laps on a big bike we'll get if practice goes well in the races. Yep. And it's around 25 and 600, and for the race fuel it's going to be roughly between 3 and 3.5 grand for them laps.
Oh, that's some coin, isn't it? On a positive note,
it's almost as much.
You know,
as
at least time. You're riding somebody else's 600, so you can break that instead of your own.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been fortunate with that. So I hope that all goes well. He's got two good engines sat there, and yeah, the deal is I put some tyres and fuel.
And what is it? What SimSport machine are you
an
riding?
An R6.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, so proper, yeah, raffle engines and stuff. So yeah, it's a proper little thing. Mm.
So where's race fuel coming from as well? How do you get your hands on that? And what's the difference between that and pump fuel? Just the octane that's in it?
Yeah, I think so. It's more octane, isn't it? It's a cleaner bang in the engine. It's definitely better for your engine and stuff, but yeah, like I said, I've never had problems with pump fuel. People do have problems because of the tanks and stuff has come from, but I haven't had one. And last year, none of my problems were due to fuel, so £1.50 a litre to £4.50.
So it's, and part of it is it's less of a risk for anything to go wrong.
Exactly, yeah. You're just getting clean fuel. Yeah. So if you can afford it, definitely use it, yeah. But
yeah, but where'd you pick it up from? Like, do you go and buy it by the barrel? Do you buy it by, like, you can't just go to a pump, can you, and go and get it from
no,
someone?
No, you can't buy it from pump. You buy it by, you know, basically in a 20 litre barrel, and it'll be delivered to the Isle of Man.
Right, yeah. Got you. And yeah, is there one type of race fuel? Is it like a manufacturer that just makes one type of race fuel? I might sound stupid saying this, but I have no idea. It's not like Shell, is it? It's not like Texaco or Asda.
No, there are various companies that do supply race fuel to various championships. You know, British Superbike uses a 1-mate fuel for all classes. So there are companies around, some are based in Ireland, some are based in the UK, that supply race fuel for anybody that needs it. And it's pretty much, you know, some championships use it to keep it very level.
Right.
So there's no cheating, because you can cheat on fuel in particular classes. But pretty much there are various companies especially around Europe, that supply specific fuels for specific bikes.
All right. And what price is it? Would it be a litre? What would it say on the big sign if they say...
20, I look after the F900 Cup at British Championship, and that's compulsory. That's the same fuel for each bike, supplied by one company. And I think last season was roughly £70 for a 20-litre drum.
What is that? What's that? I don't know what that
Work
equates
it out.
To.
You went to school, didn't you? Well, no, probably didn't.
No. I mean, I went to school. I didn't listen. But what's that? Like £2 a litre or something like that?
Yeah. It's not massively expensive because it can save a lot of problems as well.
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, it keeps it even. But case of riding the TT course, going back to Ryan or anybody that's competing at the TT, it's one less thing to go wrong because you can get contamination in quite an awful lot of pump fuels.
Yeah.
For a race bike.
Yeah, it's £3,000 just for fuel, and then you've just got...
What's tyre budget? And in just on that, because it's interesting, I think, for the listener.
I think it's between 5 and 6 for the tyre budget for both bikes this year, and that's something I'm working on, trying to get some help behind that.
3 front tyres and 3 rears for that?
Yeah, near enough. It's £500 a set now. It's, you know, probably when you're racing that, and I remember when we raced earlier in the days, you could pick a set of tyres with like £240. And
yeah,
we're just getting priced out of the market at the minute. I don't know where this is going to go, because we can't get, like, I can't afford to keep doing this all the time. There's no way. Is, you know, you still got to put tea on the table at home, haven't you?
And do you, so with the tyre budget, you obviously allocate a set amount of tyres, but if you come in and you look at it and you go, I could probably get another lap out of that, would you? Or based on like safety and what you've, you've kind of budgeted, you just go, screw it, just stick a new tyre in anyway.
Yeah, I work on safety more than anything. Yeah. You know, if you can't afford to be there, you shouldn't be there in a sense. Mm. You know, you can't go scraping 8 laps out of a tyre when it should only do 4 in my head. I try and get a set of tyres per night, and in that way you're in the safe line. Yeah, you end up with very good scrubs at the end of it to go and burn off at track day somewhere, so it's good.
Does that mean there's a lot of cheap tyres going for sale?
He's got some track days booked. That's what he's trying to sniff. He's going to Jerez. I know exactly what's going on there.
You wait till I come back and I'm the chief biker here. I'll have done more racing than you this year.
Yeah.
They'll be looking at me with respect.
You know
for
how
once.
He talks. They call it Trakanori. That's what he'll be talking when he gets back from Jerez.
So fast, I got my knee down and everything.
Chris. What are your expectations for 24 then? You're obviously riding more classes. You've got the Manx under your belt, bit of mileage and stuff. What's your expectations really? What would you be happy with?
It's hard to say weather and wise and all that. We get the time we need, but if we have a good run through practice and now I've left senior race day with a bike that I know is relatively set up. If I can jump straight into the first night of practice and get back to the speed where I was and I can build on that, I'd be happy. You know, I'm not looking to make a big jump, and I'm definitely not. And if I'm, you know, 20th in the senior, if I'm around them kind of results in the top 20 again, I'd be happy with that. You know, people say other things, but it's all about being safe, coming back, enjoying it. And if you're in the top 20 of the CT, I'd be happy with that for the second year. You know, I'd maybe done more than what I thought I would have done last year. So it's maybe upset this year a bit for me, because obviously I do want to go faster. Yeah, but I'll never sit and say everyone's got a figure in their head, haven't they? But they'll never sit here and tell you, because
go on, tell us.
110.
The answer to that question is just to improve.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So if I go 10 seconds faster, 5 seconds faster, if I'm better, I'm better, aren't I?
What's life like on the Isle of Man when we're not racing? So this time of year, so we're in February now, heading to March. What's going on in Ryan's world? Is every day some form of prep to the TT, or are you just got your head down in your work? Because obviously you're not a professional, you are working full-time as well, so.
No, it's just, we're just working away in the background, trying to get some funds together to do the job. I'm doing a bit of training for the first time, so I'm training most days of the week, try to get a session midweek on the motocross bike in as well as at the weekend, because I think that's really good for you. Other than that, it's as quiet as you can imagine. There's nothing going on over there.
It's a quiet island.
You've 2 weeks. We're actually in Manchester here in a studio. You've flown over. You said you've been down to the Supercross in London watching. You're not sniffing a return, are you, onto Nobblies and having a dabble at that as well?
I done everything I could last year to get an entry, but they were in between 2 different rounds, so they didn't pick me all up till too late. So I'd love a go. I would. My motocross is my first love, and it still is. I love it. I always go back to it all the time. It's something you can. My tyres on my bike have been on there for the last 5-6 rides now. It's not cheap, but it's way cheaper than doing what we do here. Well, you know, if someone got me an entry for next year to go and do a round, I'd be at it.
Would you be competitive, do you think? Like, I don't quite know what the level is.
That's horrible questions sometimes, isn't it? No, of course he would.
But don't forget, these boys are on it day in, day out. You're on it not as much, but could you just rock up there and be competitive?
No, so they've got a amateur class, if you want to call it that, for people like to me who work each time. And then you've got the pros as well. So you definitely wouldn't be jumping into the pro class. Right. But I just want to tick the box there. It's something I've always... something I wish I would have got into as a kid, honestly. It looks so fun. I love jumping bikes and the technical side and the timing side. It's all I like. That's the way I work on a motocross bike. I really enjoy that kind of thing. So
you're not right. You're not normal. You're not, is it? They don't make... Well, I'm going to be contradicted here, because they do make wings for bikes now, but they're supposed to be... That's to keep the wheels on the floor, not flipping takeoff.
Nah, I really enjoy it. I really do. It's something that, if I get a chance to, I've said to somebody before this, if I get a chance to take that box next year, we'll be going.
Who's the GOAT then, in your opinion, when it comes to Supercross?
Oh, Bubba.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, he used to do things back in the day. Remember the Daytona when that wall jump, he used to pre-jump it and jump over the top of it. Just the stuff he used to do was ridiculous. And when he had to turn it on, no one would see which way he went.
Jet Lawrence
is ridiculous.
Is he going to be the next Bubba, the next Carmichael?
I think he already is, isn't he? There's a few watching Saturday nights again. He had it in the bag again, and he seems to make a few mistakes and cost himself the win, but he's young.
Was he 18, 19?
Yeah, and you sit and watch the things he actually does on a bike, the way he absorbs bumps instead of taking it through his body and that. He's just so... Yeah, he's proper on his A game.
Yeah, it seems like you get those people who... You get the type of rider that comes and follows what everyone else is doing, but then you get those like probably Carmichael, James Stewart and Jet Lawrence who just rip the rule book up and just ride their own way, and then people start to emulate them, don't they? And the way they ride. They ride completely different.
Yeah, and that's something I'd love to go out and watch one day. You know, it's one of them. It's just such a good event.
Obviously, you said you love doing the jumps and so on, but what about these lunatics that I can't remember, I'm not as genned up, but that jump off the high-rise buildings that are, you know, what? In the States and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not. Don't think I'm up for that.
No. Oh, you mean with parachutes?
No.
On a motorbike?
Yeah.
Who?
Robbie Madison.
Madison.
Oh, he jumped.
I spent some time with Robbie.
Yeah, he's...
He's a lovely, lovely lad at Western Beach Race.
Yeah.
He's a lovely, lovely lad, but he's not right.
It's something that we've done Western. That's a hard slog, that 3 hours.
Have you?
But yeah.
I've commentated Western a few times, and I went 23 just as a punter, looking around and watching, because I've never actually been out and watched everywhere. Incredible place. And, mate, listen, you said you don't train. You must be half fit to do flipping Western.
Oh, I bet.
I've been three times, I think. The first time I blew the guts out of the bike at the end of the street after a couple of hours.
Well, obviously, listening to this podcast, you're very good at that.
Yeah.
That's his biggest, strongest talent.
If you want a bike wreck, give me a call. We can sort it out. Unfortunately, I am a bike wrecker. I am. I don't know why, but I just seem to put them to the test. And yeah, so Western, definitely a good experience. It's something I want to do again. It's something. Last time I finished, I think I was 40, high 40s last year. But I snapped two clutch lever and purchase. I was in the pits rage as well. So we were having a good ride until then. It's just something I finish. Take my helmet and go, I'm never doing that again.
For a week.
Until I get up the M6 to own that boat home. Like, we're fucking it's hard. It is very, very hard on the body, but it's we ride sand. That's all we ride at home. We've got real good sand tracks and that sand.
For me, Western Beach Race is the same kind of outlook as the Isleman TT. It's the pinnacle of dirt bikes, really. It's the toughest part of dirt bikes to a certain degree.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. I remember a few years ago, I got set off right at the front, basically, and same as the TT, you're always learning. Like, we came into a dune, and the organisers, the dune was obviously a very tall dune, but very, very sneakily, they put a roller before it to go up the dune. But me, not thinking about it, I came into this roller, seeing it as a jump to jump up the dune. I jumped, and as soon as I landed in the face of the dune, the bike just sunk, and I just had to jump off, rip it round, go back down, come back up again. That was my lesson learned, you know, it's just little things.
Wait, I thought Latuque was like the big one of the beach races.
No, it's big, you know.
It's not as big as Western.
No, it is, because it's big, but it's obviously, as I meant, really in the UK.
All right.
But
okay.
But obviously, Latuque is massive. But you get your sand specialist, because the main man's just won that this year, hasn't he?
The Sandman.
Yeah, oh, what's his name? He's won Western six times now.
Todd.
Todd Kellett.
Yeah.
All right.
Todd Kellett. Yeah, well done, mate. Yeah, Todd Kellett is flipping heck. He's something special.
He is ridiculous in the sand. He's been over to Ireland a few times training as well.
Has he?
I think they call him Sand Rat. Yeah. He's just...
Yeah, fair play.
He's not built for it either. He's a very small person. And when you don't have the legs, like, I've tried doing the odd enduro here and then. Got me a little stumpy legs, and I can't put my foot down to get myself up the next bit. You know, I end up spinning up, going underground, getting angry and stuff. So I just, it's not for me and Juro. And he's the same, you know, you need your legs and that, and he hasn't got them. So to do what he does is special.
What makes a good sand rider then? And what is so difficult about riding on sand? Just the softness of it?
The softness of it. So the hardest thing to get in someone's head is the faster you go, the easier it is. Because
right,
as soon as you chop the throttle, the front wheel will just dig into sand and put you out the front door. So, but trying to register that with people, you need to go quick to go make it easy for you. You know, it's a confidence thing all over again, isn't it?
Yeah. So, finishing off with our motocross chat, greatest of all time, you're still saying Bubba across all categories of motocross. What about Knighter? technically who? It's Enduro. Enduro, but I don't know. A guy called David Knight. Have you heard of him? Have you heard of him, Ryan?
A few times.
He's done a bit.
Yeah.
I've heard of Dune Knight, but not David Knight.
Oh. Dune Knight's garage is the place, I tell you.
Yeah.
What would we say? Well, Jeremy McGrath or not?
Jeremy, I don't have much memory because I was young when he was in his prime. He's not my era. Stephen Evert was going out of my era as I was getting to know everything he was still about, but he was sort of fading out as I was getting to remember all this stuff. But obviously, he was another goer. Yeah.
Jeff Erlins?
Yeah. He's just won Hawkstone yesterday, hasn't he?
Is he a Dutchie?
He is ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I once held a door open for Stephen Evert.
Did you?
Yeah, at Mete. What do you think to that?
Yeah. Well, we can all claim fame somehow, I suppose.
What's your biggest claim to fame apart from sitting next to me?
I can't claim anything, really. I mean,
your little story about your skiing holiday, there was names getting dropped left, right and centre there, weren't there?
Old names.
Yeah, but...
Scottish Mafia.
Yeah.
Jim Moody.
Name them.
Jim Moody, Ian Simpson, Brian Morrison, Woolsey Coulter.
Absolute legends of the sport.
What a skiing trip.
Did you actually see any snow, though? Or?
Good snow. Really good snow. It was actually colder at home. It was that real bad spot. Anyway, it's brilliant. Good catch up with the guys and everybody's still the same. Same flipping crackers and competitive and, yeah.
You never lose.
Morrison
it,
won, he had the most crashes.
Right, one thing that people have been waiting for, because you haven't been on the podcast for a while, and I tried to pick up the gauntlet, but I couldn't do it justice. Steve Plater's quickfire questions.
Yeah.
Come on, sock
right, just 10 quickfire questions, answer one or the other.
Yeah.
Okay, don't need any explanations or anything. Beer or spirits?
Spirits.
Two stroke or four stroke?
Two stroke.
Ooh, made a crossing, you see. Blonde or brunette?
Blonde.
Nobblies or slicks?
Slicks.
Pineapple or never pineapple on a pizza?
Never pineapple.
Boo, get out.
There's a door. Modern or classic superbikes?
Modern.
Good lad. Crosby jump or Balakirai jump? Both fast.
Crosby.
Top 10 British Superstock or top 10 at the TT?
Top 10 TT.
I knew you'd say that. Grandstand to Balakrain or Ginger Hall to Ramsey?
Ginger Hall to Ramsey.
Motocrosser.
Flipping heck. Connor Cummins or David Knight?
Connor.
Sorry, Knighter.
He's helped me, so yeah, got him.
Hey, thanks, mate.
Ryan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Safe trip back to the island, and we'll see you.
And good luck
in a couple of months.
24,
yeah.
Mate.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me. Cool, thank mate. You.
Ryan has left the building, so now we can say whatever we want about him.
Be kind.
No, hey, listen.
He's broader than you.
Yeah, much broader than me, yeah. He could probably knock me out with one punch. But what a lovely lad.
Hey, great. You know, I didn't realise what a tough time he had as a newcomer last year.
Yeah, I did a feature with him on the daily roundups of the TT, and they were busy working then, and he was, I think we're only halfway through the TT, and you could see that he was stressed. You could see there was a lot going on, and he was, I mean, you... If the TT happens every other week, he probably would have packed up and gone home. But it's once a year for 2 weeks. So you have to beg, steal and borrow. And like he said in the chat, he just went out and bought a bike. Probably put himself into, I'm not going to say huge debt, but, you know, don't make it easy for himself.
He made it pretty clear he's still paying that debt off. You know, it's a massive task. Not just obviously physically, but financially, you know. And it's quite a great insight, especially for the listeners, of what it actually costs the privateers to go and race the Alaman TT.
It makes you think, is it almost worth it?
Of course.
But that's it. You know, you put all that money and effort in for 50 weeks of the year to then, just for those 2 weeks, just to rip around that island. And while he's got his helmet on and he's under that bubble, it's all worth it then, isn't it?
Hey, of course it is. And it's times two. There's two brothers that are having a go as well.
So what else did you pick up from the chat with Ryan then?
Obviously, Connor's an ally. Connor Cummins, you know, a nearly man. Very, very nearly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Connor's been so fast for so many years, he stood on the podium with me when I won, you know, and still up there on the pace. So it's a big part of his life. And of course, I asked him between, I thought he was going to say 90 in
the quick fire
questions. Yeah. But yeah, I suppose he didn't want to upset Connor.
Well, do you know what? If he carries on the way he's going, there's a good chance he might be upsetting Connor and taking a victory as the first Manxman in a long time. Imagine that.
Don't you put Connor down like that. There's still life left in him yet.
I love Connor, and I think he has got a win in him. Regardless of what other people say, he's got a win in him. He might need a little bit of luck to do it, but...
It would make my TT24 if Connor won.
Do you know what? I think it'd make everybody's, even the people he beats, I think they'd doff their caps and say, chapeau, Connor, you deserve that. But here's just a quick question before we go. If Connor won this year, let's say he did, do you think that'd be it? Do you think he'd go, do you know what, I've had it now, I'm done?
Yeah, I think it would be, actually.
So the only reason he's kind of still racing is to get that victory, or...
No, I wouldn't say that. Connor loves it. He's so passionate about the TT. You know, he's a great ambassador for the event. Obviously, he's a local. But I think, realistically, if he was to win, then he would put his resources into other things and probably take a step back.
Yeah, he's a businessman, isn't he?
Certainly is.
Well, that's it for this episode of the TT Podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a rating and a review wherever you're currently listening to this. We read them all and we appreciate them all. It only takes 30 seconds and it makes Steve's day, doesn't it, Steve?
Not half.
Steve and I will be back next week and we'll be speaking with Sean Anderson. In fact, here's a little teaser of that episode now.
You have to understand, right, I'm a complete TT fanatic. There isn't a YouTube clip for 3 seconds of somebody going flat out through the bottom of a gara that I don't watch. Oh, there's a new podcast this week. Oh, there's Between the Hedges, there's a such and such, there's a documentary in German about such, like Trummer or somebody like that there. Right, I watch that with subtitles. There isn't anything that goes on Mega. That I don't try to keep my hand in.
That next episode will be available next week on this podcast feed. Or if you just can't wait for it and you need your TT fix, it's available to watch right now over on TT Plus. Head over to ttplus.iomttracers.com and sign up for completely free, for nothing, nout, nada. Either way, we're going to speak to you next time. Ciao for now, Steve.
Ta-da.